I was working with AmChip as part of the actual learning collaborative, and then I was looking for referrals, and CityMatch said, okay, a perfect example would be the project in North Carolina. So many people came to there to select this particular project. Okay, now I'm introducing Chira Rutman. She's from the Urban Indian Health Institute, Seattle Indian Health Board. She is working with us, Seattle Indian Health Board and Chira are working with us in what we are calling the Native Baby Project, focusing on the health, the issue of infant mortality in the Native American population. Chira is a project coordinator at the Urban Indian Health Institute. Her background includes a master in public health from the University of Washington, reproductive health research at the University of California, San Francisco, and she was a Peace Corps volunteer at Uzbekistan, Central Asia. Chira?
So because I'm height challenged, I don't usually like to stand behind here, but I guess with a microphone it's okay. See my eyes. So thank you for having me. I'm passing around a sign-up sheet for those of you who are interested in learning more after the session about the topics that I'm going to be sharing with you and about urban American Indian and Alaska Native health. So we have a listserv. Also, our information is there. And I'm going to be talking about some discussions that we had with urban American Indian and Alaska Native parents. We're calling it keeping babies healthy and safe, but we are looking for a better better name. We're working on that piece. Let's see. I have no disclosures. So first I'd like to acknowledge the advisory council that has been working with us for some time now, actually, the Healthy Baby Advisory Council. Many members are from maternal and child health, from urban Indian health, and community representatives from around the country. Also, the staff and families that have participated with us and continue to from Detroit, Sacramento, Salt Lake City, and from Seattle. So I want to mention a little bit about the organization that I work for. I work for the Urban Indian Health Institute, and our website is there. It was created in July of 2000 with partial funding from the Indian Health Service. And we're a division of the Seattle Indian Health Board, which is a private nonprofit health center. We are one of 11 tribal epidemiology centers. Most of these tribal epicenters serve regions of the country and tribes in those regions. However, the Urban Indian Health Institute, or the UIHI, serves a network of about 34 nationwide urban Indian health organizations. And I'll talk a little bit about those. Our mission is to support the health and well-being of urban Indian communities through information, scientific inquiry, and technology. So I'm just going to leave this map up here while I talk a little bit more about these urban Indian health organizations. That way, if any of you are from one of these areas, you might look to get in touch with those organizations, and I could help you do that. Or you can go to our website for more information. But there, again, are 34 of UIHOs in 19 states that serve about 94 counties. And actually, there is a new program that opened. This Boston program has closed. There's a new organization there and also a satellite office in Baltimore. So there are, as you can see, areas that are not served, and we hope that this program will expand. And these are private, non-for-profit organizations. They receive funding from Title V of the Indian Healthcare Improvement Act. About one-third are federally qualified health centers, and most use a sliding scale payment system and have also additional funding sources from aside from the IHS. Approximately 160,000 clients are served by these organizations, and they vary quite a bit in size and service options. The Seattle Indian Health Board is one of the largest and one of the oldest. There are also smaller referral organizations and community centers. So I want to do a little bit of background about the population that I'm speaking about, urban American Indians and Alaska Natives. There are approximately 4.1 million, and I apologize, this is still Census 2000. The 2010 data for the urban geographic areas hasn't been released, so we're waiting on that feel so old now, but we're still waiting. So these are individuals who have identified as American Indian or Alaska Native alone or in combination with another race, about 1.5% of the total U.S. population. And of those, 4.1 million, or about 67%, live in urban areas. So this number actually surprises people very often, and I'd like to share it because it is, for many, new information. And I'd like to start again with some background about the project now. We received funding from the Office of Minority Health. I've been working very closely with Isabel, and I'm really grateful for all that support. And early on have talked about, you know, really wanting to do a campaign focused on infant mortality for Native Americans, you know, in seeing all the great work that they've done, that Healthy Baby Begins With You campaign. So we have been working to develop and pilot a communication campaign to address infant mortality. We started by conducting a literature review and also a review of campaigns to see what has been done, what campaigns have actually been done for American Indian communities in any topic. There were very few. We came up with a couple that were focused on infant mortality with the criteria that we looked at, but we really examined a wide range of how is information being communicated at this point to American Indian audiences. And our report, there are a number of copies in the back of the room looking to the past to improve the future, shares that those findings. Today I'm going to be talking about the focus groups, but they also are a select number of copies of this report and the findings, comprehensive findings in the back of the room, and these are also available on our website. From these focus groups, I'm only going to be focusing on one portion of those findings. So again, if you want the full scope of information about communications, messaging, and all the rich information that participants shared with us, please refer to that report or follow up with me. We're going to be then producing materials, communication materials. We're going to be producing and are now producing a video. We're going to test those with some of our focus group audiences. We're going to evaluate them, and then we'll have a wide release. So in looking back to the past to improve the future, some of the findings there, as well as other findings, I'd like to share briefly here in terms of why does this work need to happen. So we know that there are higher rates among urban American Indians and Alaska Natives for infant mortality overall, prematurity, unintended and teen births, lacking and late prenatal care, prenatal smoking and alcohol use, youth and sexual health risks are present and higher in those populations, and interpersonal and sexual violence. And I also want to point out specifically that there is a report on reproductive health from the National Survey of Family Growth, and some copies are in the back of the room. And we do try to pull out some of the findings on menstruation as well, because we believe this is an area of interest for the population. Also, I want to note that this population has a unique historical and cultural perspective. Identity, their barriers and experiences with healthcare and access are very unique. And this is true across the United States. So even among the findings that we have, there's a range of diversity. As well as socioeconomic barriers, we know are high in this population. And I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I really want to talk about what the participants told us, but just as some context. So the methods for our focus groups are here. We held discussions at 4 urban Indian health organizations with American Indian and Alaska Native parents. We had 4 focus groups with moms, 1 group and 4 individual interviews with dads. And the sites that we worked with were in Detroit, Michigan, Sacramento, California, Salt Lake City, Utah, and Seattle, Washington. And the concept for these discussions focused on keeping babies healthy and safe. So really focusing on infant mortality is not always an appropriate topic that will draw in American Indian communities, although, again, you can't say anything across the board about any population. So we decided to focus on really the idea of keeping babies healthy and safe. And we also conducted anonymous surveys with these groups for the demographic and other information. So this is a little background on the participants. There were about 39. There were 39 participants, 27 moms and 12 dads. The average age for moms was 28 years, and the average age for dads was 30. You can see the marital status here: 38% of moms and 33% of dads are single. 27% of moms are married, and 42% of dads are living together, not married. Their incomes are mostly majority had incomes less than $25,000 a year. a majority were also unemployed, and a total of 30 tribal affiliations were identified. So in urban areas, a large number of tribes are represented. And this background socioeconomic status of our participants really matches a national picture as well. So the topics from our discussions that I'm going to be sharing with you today are about the healthy and safe baby concept, barriers and facilitators to keeping babies healthy and safe, the role for men and dads, sources of information and support, and themes that came really from the participants themselves but that we didn't directly elicit were related to urban life and the urban Indian health organizations. And, you know, I just want to note that this information we feel is very relevant for work on preconception health, although we didn't talk about preconception health per se. But again, given the broad vision that Dr. Liu introduced earlier, we feel these topics are quite in line with what we're all talking about here today. So the findings were, interestingly, very consistent across all four cities and the parent groups, although there were bits and pieces that came through more from men and from women. So we're presenting those all together here. And there are select responses which I've categorized into contextual aspects, physical, emotional, and environment as a way of breaking them down to think about them. And also, again, the themes of urban life and UIHO were not elicited but came from the participants. So first, we asked participants, what does healthy and safe baby mean to you? So again, as Mrs. Key, you know, mentioned to us, you know, we need to know, what does this mean? Does it mean the same thing I'm thinking of? What images come to mind? So participants did talk about these individual sort of intervention-focused ideas of nutrition, breastfeeding, immunizations, car seats, general proper development and lack of illness, as well as really a focus on access to healthcare and information, prenatal care, and wellness. Also, there was a lot of discussion around just a happy baby, a loved baby, and a supported baby. I really thought that was lovely. You know, beyond just these health interventions, we're talking about happy and loved. Also, parents having healthy expectations, a routine, and taking the care of the baby the best that you can. So in thinking about the healthy and safe baby, participants talked also about parents. And then much of what was shared with us was really focused on the environment, and you could also say community. So a healthy, safe, and stable environment and a home, drug and alcohol-free home, being with their mother, being protected and not exposed to violence were really a major focus throughout all of the discussions and came through here when asked about the concept. One quote is, "Everybody involved in that child's life working together to ensure that they're in a safe environment." So I want to touch on some of the barriers that participants described in keeping their babies healthy and safe. Overall, they focused a lot on the lack of support, a lack of resources, and then more specifically stress, teen parenting, and single parenting, which really spanned the above themes as well of lacking support and lacking resources. Specifically with regard to support, participants also mentioned childcare, being able to access childcare, and then finding childcare that they trusted came through a lot. So even if they were really not feeling like they had a lot of control around that. Also, feelings about social isolation and a lack of follow-up from healthcare. So before I got pregnant, I felt like I had doctors and people coming to me and really seemed to care. And after the baby came, that was it. I was alone. With regard to lack of resources, many of these, I think Dr. Padilla mentioned in terms of social determinants of health, money, transportation, employment, unexpected bills. This is not new information, but it had a strong impact and a barrier to these families keeping their babies healthy and safe. So I'm going to read a quote here related to one participant's description of her experience as a teen parent. "I think back now and my family didn't really mentally support me. Here I am, 15 years old, bringing this little baby home, and I was a single mom." So even feeling like she wasn't receiving the support she needed from within her family. A little more here on barriers. And this came through many times from the fathers, this challenge to maintaining Native values. This loss of cultural awareness and Native identity really felt like a barrier to keeping their babies healthy and safe. And the need for Native-specific education, resources, and support. Also, conflicting norms So unhealthy and or outdated norms, for example, related to nutrition, to safe sleep, and smoking. And I'll read this quote related to this idea of conflicting norms. Sometimes you want to go visit your relatives and they're smokers. You can't ask them, hey, can you not smoke? They're doing drugs. So the only thing you can do is leave. But then there's tension there because they're like, what, you're better than me? It's really this idea that somehow trying to be healthy, trying to break out of patterns even within your family and your community is a barrier to keeping your family healthy and safe, even when you have the information about what needs to be done. Finally, I'd like to talk about facilitators, and in many cases, these are mirrors of the barriers that I mentioned. So the first is shared norms. So having control over their environment, having a strong Native identity, and shared values among caregivers were seen as really supportive and what made it easy to keep their baby healthy and safe. Also resources, support, and information from urban Indian health organizations were mentioned, transportation, healthy food, and community resources. And this quote is, it's like sometimes you won't make it to the appointment if you don't have somebody to help you. So it's really the step before the appointment itself is just getting there in some cases for these families. And finally, traditions and nature. Ceremonies, dancing, time spent in nature, traditional and seasonal foods, and crafts like cradle boards. And I think particularly, again, for urban populations who feel removed from these. So next I'd like to talk about the role for men and dads. And we actually asked both the moms and the dads, what do you see the role as? We asked them the same question. And these three areas came through, the idea of being present, being a role model, and being a provider. So the first, being present, just the idea of spending time with a baby and being more involved came through a lot. So although many people did talk, and I'll speak to this again in just a moment, about being provider financially and a support in that way, just being there seemed to be the number one idea. Also being a role model, providing a good example, for example, within relationships with mom and women in general, what does it look like to be in a positive relationship with women and mom? How a man or a dad is supposed to be, and also who you bring around the house. So what kind of environment are you creating for the baby? And then also being a patient guide. That was a really lovely sentiment. And then being a provider, providing financially for the home and for the mother, and providing stability and protection. So again, this was mentioned, the idea of protecting and providing for the mom, whether or not you're in a marriage or relationship with her, was seen as the right thing as a man and dad. I also want to mention here that comments made by some of the women that men are traditionally conducting select ceremonies, so they carry that piece for the community. Also that there's an opportunity for healthcare workers to help set expectations in addition to providing information for fathers. I've heard a lot of men say that they were not sure how to participate or how to be involved or how to feel like they're part of what's going on. So one participant felt like that role could be provided by healthcare workers, for example, in the homes. If you come and do a home visit, hand the baby to the father and see what happens, how they can engage with you. So I'll talk next about information, sources of information. So the most common sources mentioned were Urban Indian Health Organization, other women and mothers, and family. The most trusted sources were a little different, although similar. Again, Urban Indian Health Organization staff, and doctors, and grandmothers, or women who had lots of children. So experience was major. Participants also talked about cultural barriers to receiving information about how to keep their babies healthy and safe. Accessing information from non-American Indian and Alaska Native settings posed barriers related to health literacy and a lack of cultural sensitivity. One quote here is, sometimes when I go to the hospital, they use a big word and I don't understand it, and I have to ask them what it is. Last time they told me a viral infection, I thought she had an infection in her lungs or something, and it was just a cold, another word for a cold. So that's just an example. And finally, support. Sources of support that were mentioned most commonly to keep babies healthy and safe are family members, and again, these urban Indian health organizations, specifically home visits and the Native Healthy Start, which is located in Detroit. Also, traditional practices and ceremonies and communal child rearing, the idea of it takes a village, really came through strongly. And I'll read another quote here. We got the placenta and buried it. You say a prayer and stuff. You know, tribes do different things. It was nice to have this community of women. So I want to touch now briefly on the challenges of urban life. Participants said a lot about specific to urban life and what that means, but I want to highlight these here because I think they provide some information that isn't always widely known. So I'll read through. Tribal registration and access to resources are seen as a challenge of urban life specifically. Also cultural identity challenges. The lack of awareness of natives in the city, just people not knowing that there are American Indians in the city. Judgment from family on the reservation. Here a quote is, I think what would kind of help a lot of natives too is just letting them know it's okay to live in an urban area and being a Native American and get a good education and be very healthy. And finally, trying to maintain traditions. The quote is, my dad was in boarding school, so when he came out from Arizona, he didn't take all that culture with him. I had to find it out for myself, and really feeling alone in doing that, as I mentioned earlier. And finally, these urban Indian health organizations, beyond specific programs or services, participants who were not recruited just from these organizations, but from the surrounding community as well, noted the irreplaceable sense of community and place that they feel at these organizations. So again, as Dr. Liu mentioned, it's not just the health services, it's really providing a sense of place, a sense of identity, location. And I'll read a couple quotes. It's better for those that don't have families to come to places like this. It's really important, I think, to keep programs like this going. They always support you. That's really great because your family won't do that. At least mine won't. So again, feeling a sense of family. So in summary, we feel these findings are critical to helping us produce the materials that we're working on now and that are specifically relevant for this population of urban American Indians and Alaska Natives. As I mentioned, the findings are being used to develop a short video, and we're also going to be making recommendations for upscaling the infant mortality campaign to a broader nationwide audience. Thank you.
Well, before they come to kick us out of here, we have time for a couple of questions. So if anybody, let me say thank you again to the speakers. Thank you very much. And thank you to the Latino Caucus for hosting us. And questions.
Talked about the importance too of that is having somebody there 24/7 because kids want it back immediately. They don't want their email returned, and that's been one of the barriers, I think. But it has been discussed, and I would love to see that. And that was the bump.
The bump.com. They have a smartphone application.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the teen mothers that are on that smartphone application, they kind of get harassed by some of the older mothers. You know, they'll ask questions that they don't know the answers to. And then they get harassed, like, oh, but you should have Googled that. Like, well, I'm coming to this online forum to ask of other
people. They felt like they were coming to a safe place.
Right. And,
yeah.
And they're not getting that.
Mm.
Yeah. So just an idea.
Oh, that is. Good idea.
This question is also for you, Jane. Do you have any, do you guys have any plans to do any qualitative evaluation of your website in terms of to get a better idea of what users are going, you know, what they're looking for on your site, what they think of the site, etc.?
And then the campaign is working on that. Since they are the primary, they have the money for it, they're the ones working on that. So, yeah. There's no use to have it if you don't evaluate it and keep it going. So I'm sure they're playing. Do I know specifically? No, but my best guess would be they're looking at that right now. If they have the kind of data of where they're getting the information, they're going to take that to the next level.
Okay.
I want to thank the panel, and I want to especially thank Dr. Liu for that incredibly student-friendly paper on the applying the life course model to black-white, reducing the black-white gap in infant mortality. I just let my students know that I'm here at Public Health University for classes, but I'm going to come back because they were assigned Dr. Liu, and now I'm going to hear him speak, so I can come back and report. communities we come from, I'm Cuban American, and working in the Latino population, there's really much more of an emphasis on the intergenerational family, and that's one of the things that's missing for me that you see in our family systems maps of the life course is the spiral intergenerational dimension. And I think when we do community-based work in the Boston area where I work, one of the challenges is, as some of you mentioned, there are intergenerational tensions around cultural preservation, around some of the things that go on in poor families dealing with all of these social stresses. And so I just wonder what your thinking is about incorporating the family perspective. You know, I'm more kind of from the individual and family up than from the macro, newer to the macro down. But I just wonder how you deal with that, any of you, with the intergenerational dimension.
Maybe I'll start. You know, I certainly think that, that right now there's more and more people doing their life course research, but they're still working in silence. Okay, from their disciplinary approach, and we really gotta get these head researchers out of their disciplinary silos and start thinking about, you know, how do we nurture that crosstalk? We could certainly learn a lot from other fields in terms of family, in terms of intergeneration and so forth, that we don't usually look as much at in public health. So I think you know, there's greater recognition of the need to look at this whole life course perspective to sort of the transgenerational patterns. But I think we're still at very early gestation in terms of doing that.
Anybody?
And certainly we're hearing that from our families as well, just the need for the images. And I didn't get to talk about what was described in terms of what participants want to see, images, spokespeople, messages, but a lot of what you're describing too, we just want to see mom and baby, because we don't see that. That's not what we live with, so we want to see family, and everyone needs to be there.
I have a question about the urban American Indian population. I was wondering what channels maybe you've identified for delivering messages or types of interventions or treatments.
Well, there were, I mean, channels in terms of different types of media.
Or delivery of media.
Yeah, so there was a range that was mentioned to us, but one thing that led us to the video is that people really said, DVDs, you can pass DVDs out at powwows, for example. There are a lot of health clinics now that have TVs in the waiting room. I mean, there's TVs everywhere now. And that people use basic, there was one quote I loved, someone said, even the elderly use Facebook. So, similar to what we heard today, I think the need to have something be interactive. And, you know, I found it extremely powerful, and I've been working, it's maybe 6 years now, in urban Indian health, and I think, you know, just hearing, for example, this men's group, a group of Native men from the focus group transcriptions, is extremely powerful to hear voices that you don't hear and see. And that's really what came through for us, too. We want to hear and see these voices. You know, when I asked people, who do you want to see? They said, we want to see people like us. You know, just even that they felt like would be a health intervention in terms of what they described feeling socially isolated and needing that community. So that's what we're aiming for with this video. And there's a little more detail again in the report.
Any more questions?
This is for the urban health. How many tribes do you work with up in the Seattle area?
Well, at the Seattle Indian Health Board, they serve not individual tribes. So there are 565, maybe
so
500.
How do you culturally give them the message that's culturally specific to each, because tribes are all different, their beliefs are different,
absolutely,
their values, their cultures.
Yeah. We did do our focus groups in four different areas with an attempt to gather information from a variety. But one of the things that, you know, we came through from our literature searching and from what we know from working in these communities is that, you know, there's really is a need to tailor messages, to tailor faces, to tailor images, colors even, to different areas. And
facilitate many of these topics that came through to us from the participants, and that's the direction that we're going in. And a number of ways for Native Americans, let's say in the United States, and even, you know, I just had the chance to visit the National Institutes for Health, National Library of Medicine. They have an amazing Native Voices display out right now. And there are a number of themes that do go across all the three cultural communities that they worked with, Native Hawaiians, Alaska Natives, and Native Americans. Many of those are what I described today in terms of traditions, nature, healing, concepts of healing. So although their, let's say, you know, their herbs might not be the same, their dance regalia might not be the same, there are themes that transect across. And I think in terms of support, just the concept of Native identity in general, whatever that means to you, to them, let's say, we hope that will resonate. And we're going to test this in a couple of cities to find out how we do, and then we'll be able to learn more information about that. How should we be tailoring this message? It's an important point.
No more questions? Okay, well, thank you very much to all of you. Again, thank you, and let's give a hand to the panel. Thank you very much.